Hi everyone, and welcome to the Positive Education Podcast. My name is Ashmanuel, and today I'm talking with Gavin Kinch. Now, I'm really excited to have Gavin on because Gavin's been on a bit of a journey across his teaching career, originally starting in the UK, then came to Australia, and then now over in Singapore. The reason why I wanted to get Gavin on to the podcast and have a chat is to really dive deeper into the international system, because I know a lot of teachers, a lot of educators, whether you're a school leader or a teacher, have it in the back of their mind about going into the international system. So I wanted to dive into deep or deeper into that today with Gavin, so he can share some insights with you about just some considerations, some things to be aware of. So he gives provides some great tips on just to work out what to look for when also choose an international school, but also go about how to apply and where to find opportunities. And it's a really fantastic episode. He goes into I guess the cultural differences of engaging students in well-being or positive education programs within a school. He's currently at the Singapore or in Singapore he's currently at the Anglo-Chinese School, ACS, and his principal there. And we had a great conversation about just the cultural, I guess, things to consider about positive education and also being in such a high, I guess, a culture where there's a lot of emphasis placed on academic achievement. It's such an insightful episode. I'm really excited for you guys to listen. Would love to hear what you think also. And just before we start the episode, I've just got a couple of things to mention. If you haven't already, in the show notes, I'll put the school's wellbeing scorecard. So we put together a scorecard just to assess where your wellbeing or positive education programs are at the moment, and we'll give you some suggestions and some things that you're doing really well, and some things that you could try based on the score that you get. So that's really exciting. And also in the show notes, we're putting together an AI platform at the moment. It's really exciting. We're in the process of developing it, going through that stage. So put a waiting list link in the episode also. So there's in the episode show notes, there's some things to look out for as well. But in the meantime, love this episode with Gavin. And without further ado, we'll get into it. Gavin, welcome to the podcast.
Hi Ash, thank you very much. Thanks for having me, and great to be on here with you.
Pleasure, mate. Yeah, I've been really looking forward to this conversation because I know that you have gone a bit of a journey. We were just chatting before we hit record, and you started in the UK where you grew up, and then you came to Australia where you were teaching and school leader here, and then being a part of the international school system. And I know a lot of educators are interested in taking that path to it, the international school system. And personally, I had a bit of experience with it with my family. My dad and my mum took off in about year 2000 to Germany, to the Frankfurt International School, where that was an international baccalaureate school. And I personally was in an international baccalaureate school when I first started teaching as well. So personally, I always had it in the back of my mind that I wouldn't mind doing that. But then I sort of changed paths a little bit to start growing with gratitude, and it didn't quite ever happen. But I know a lot of people do want to make it happen. I'd just love to hear about your journey, about how you came for a start from UK to Australia, then where you are in Singapore at the moment.
Sure, thanks, Ash. Well, I grew up in London in a place called Rayners Lane, and I went to university over in the UK. I started working as a computer programmer there before meeting my Australian wife, Kate. She was over in the UK on a work holiday visa, and we met through a youth group that I was involved in, that she was involved in. A whirlwind romance. We got engaged within a year, and then married 6 months later in South Australia. So in 2003, I moved to South Australia, and I'd really been looking for a career change. I'd always worked with youth, and computer programming really wasn't doing it for me. And so we made the decision that I'd go back to uni in Adelaide to become a teacher. So I did that. And in 2004, I took up my first teaching position at a school sort of just on the edges of the Australian suburbs. And then 2 years after working there, I went to Tyndale Christian School and went there as a maths computing teacher. And throughout my time there, I was there for 10 years. I became the director of educational administration, so looking after the timetable, daily operations, those sorts of things. Then became the high school principal, and then became the deputy head of schools over the three campuses that that school has. And it was around that time that I decided that it was time to go overseas.
What made you want to go overseas and be a part of the international school system? Was there anything that, well, a particular thing that stood out, or was it just something you had always had in your back of your mind?
Sure. So my wife and I had been talking about going overseas for a long time because she was a chef. She's now a vet instructor. And we said that when we moved to Adelaide, we'd give it 2 years. Anyway, 13 years and three children later, we still hadn't really gone overseas. So we've been talking about doing it for a while and really thought to ourselves, well, if we don't do it now, when will we do it? So we had the three kids. They're about 4, 7, and 8. So sort of perfect time really to take them overseas and have an adventure. So I started to look online, which is probably the best place to start when looking for international jobs. So Search Associates, TESS are two big sites which you can use for international jobs. I found a number of jobs that I applied for. Wasn't really interested, didn't really know which country to go to. So I applied to India, Malaysia, and Singapore. Mm. And I got a response back from the Singapore school, which is the one I'm at now. And they said, can you interview online on Tuesday night? This was for a vice principal position. I said, sure. After that interview, they said, can you come over as soon as possible? So that weekend I went over. I had a day's worth of interviews at the school. I had to speak in the assembly, meet the team, meet the other vice principals, met with the board. And that day they took me out for dinner and they offered me the job on the spot. And so within 10 days of applying, I'd got the job. And then we started to get ready to come to Singapore and start work early 2017.
Yeah, that's interesting. That's a great story and very interesting because I think, yeah, by the sound of it, you have to be really prepared to move quite quickly. Because if the role does come up, if you keep knocking roles back in international systems, does the word sort of get around, or is it, I'm not sure. Is that a bit of a thing?
Certainly, look, in international schools, everybody is on contracts. And so contracts are really important. So breaking a contract or signing a contract and then not honoring it, those sorts of, things, it does get talked about. And if you're on the international circuit and you're known, then unfortunately that sort of thing, it goes round. If you're breaking into it for the first time, then you're probably a little bit unknown, so not such a big deal. Yep. But certainly, if you're looking to move out of the Australian system into the international system, there are certainly a number of things that you need to think about carefully.
Yeah, and I know I'm sure that you've got quite a few things to consider as you've been down that path. So what are some of those things that if people were thinking about moving into that international system, what are some considerations there?
Sure. So, it sounds obvious, but certainly do your homework. Do your homework about the country that you're moving to, because that will really make a huge difference in terms of what your experience is. So you need to think about what you're trying to get out of it. Is it to invest in a community which really needs people to come in and contribute to it? Is it for career advancement? Is it to experience a certain type of living or lifestyle? And if so, where best suits? So there's some things you need to think about. Yeah. I already mentioned contracts. It's really important to read your contract carefully, understand what your probation period is. The most important thing is to work out how you get out of your contract. So what your notice period are, and particularly if there's any penalties associated with it, because there are some horror stories of people not serving out their notice and then having to pay. If you had a 4 month notice period, having to pay to the school the 4 month salary that you would have received instead. or paying the recruitment costs of your replacement, their airfare and all the associated costs. So you've got to be careful about that.
Sorry, mate, just on that, Gavin.
With
the probation that you just mentioned, is that part of like most contracts in the international system where maybe it could be 4 or 5 weeks, whatever it might be, and if things don't work out, then that you can part ways, or how does that work?
So, I mean, it'll be different from country to country. So most schools, which are international schools, it's really important that they're getting competent staff who are going to hang around and stay. And so when they bring somebody on, if they feel that they're not quite at the standard where they would need to be, it's a lot more cutthroat than it is in Australia. In many countries, there's a lot less workplace protection laws or employment laws. And so the ability to be let go without really much cause can be a lot quicker than what people would experience under Australian law.
Yeah, interesting. And you mentioned at the start there about like considering, I guess your why you want to go and teach overseas. What was yours originally?
So for us, we wanted to expose our kids to different culture. I had lived in the UK, obviously. I'd done a lot of travel throughout Europe. My wife has traveled a lot as well. And so we wanted to give our kids that sort of experience. I'd been in my job for 10 years at Australia. I was looking for something totally different, and I felt that international schooling was a good way to achieve that. And I wanted my kids to see the world. And so when you're living in Adelaide, that's a long way from anywhere. So sort of putting yourself in the middle of a hub in Singapore worked well for us. We didn't plan that. That's just the job which I got and that I took. But it actually has worked out to be exactly what we hoped it would be.
Yeah, absolutely. That Singapore airport's amazing. And yeah, as you say, it's a hub to get to so many places. Now, I just want to, I guess, coming from Adelaide and into the international school system, what are some of those challenges or key learnings from transitioning to an international education environment? What are some of those challenges that have come up for yourself?
Sure. Well, for me at my school, which is not an Australian school, it's not a Western school. I'm the principal now of a school called Anglo-Chinese School, which is a very well-known school within Singapore and also more widely in Asia. And we try and be the Singapore International School or the Asian International School.
Yep.
And so we take a blend of kind of the Asian rigor that you would find in education, and we blend that with this kind of the more liberal approach which you might find in Western education, try and get the best of those coming together. And so when you're moving over here, you don't want to come here thinking that your way is the best way, that the Australian way is the only way to do it. And there are other ways of approaching education. There's other ways of teaching, approaching certain issues. And so you've got to be humble with your own opinions. You've got to listen to what other people say. You have to be prepared to think, actually, there are other ways of doing things. Or sometimes you've got to think, well, actually, I think my way is the right way. But because of the context and the culture here, I'm going to do it this way instead.
That's interesting, because I reckon I've seen it before where people have come into a school situation, and they just so keen to stamp their mark on the school straight away without actually spending just time, some sitting back, as you say, talking to people, just seeing how, I guess, systems work. And then once you've, I guess, taken in all this information, then making your own decisions or assumptions or about, I guess, what you can do to improve. So I love that approach, because I think it takes your ego out of it as well. People can see that you, as you said, you're humble. I think that's a really interesting way, and it sounds like you've been able to do that, because I know that I was just reading up about the school before, and you've got something like 30 cultures that attend the school. Is that right?
Yeah, so we have students who come from all over Asia. Actually, my school is one of, in Singapore, Singaporean students can't go to international schools. They're not permitted to go to them. So you can't have a Singaporean student going to, say, the Australian International School or Tanglin Trust or UWC. They can't go to those schools. They have to go to the local system. Except there are three schools in Singapore which have an exemption from that, which can take Singaporean students and mix them with international students. And we're one of those schools. And the purpose of that is so that Singaporean students do have some links and exposure to international students. So that's what we are here. And then our draw card is we attract a lot of students from Korea, from China, Japan, and then throughout Southeast Asia. So Indonesia, Malaysia, Thailand. And then Singapore has very strong diplomatic relations with India. And so we have a large number of Indian students as well. And then we have a section of our student population where they have an Asian heritage, but they hold like a UK, US, Canadian, Australian passport, because either they were born there or one of their parents is from those countries.
Yeah, interesting. And with so many different cultures, like how do you manage the, I guess, the cultural diversity and promoting the inclusivity? Is there anything that you do at the school, I guess, that does make students, I guess, feel inclusive, or that, basically, how do you manage that cultural diversity, I guess?
Yeah, sure. Look, it's a great question, because we do have a lot of students here who come from various Asian countries. And so for me, it's really setting the school environment to be one where, you know, we can talk about things, but kids need to see it in action, what you're doing to value other people. And so showing that you value the diversity, speaking about it openly, listening to what other people are saying, and having events where you will showcase a particular, like Japanese culture or Korean culture or Chinese culture, is really, really important. Ensuring that there's representation across the school from all countries. It's not just dominated by the Singaporean students, who are the predominant nation at the school. All, you know, Chinese and Korean are our next biggest. Making sure that we deliberately mix students up into classes which are varied, and trying as not to put sort of homogenous groups of nations together is really important as well. So there's some of the ways that we do it, more through people seeing the actions that we take to value people, rather than just kind of the food flags and festivals approach, which, you know, really just scratches the surface for internationalism.
Yeah, interesting. And if you're doing individual cultures, it might be nearly a weekly thing. So many different cultures. But that's great insights. And I'm also interested, I guess, the difference between the school systems. Now, from an outsider who's never taught out of Australia, been fortunate enough to visit some schools overseas, but never actually been in there to teach. What would be the main, I guess, differences between, particularly in Singapore where you are, and you've been here in Australia as well, teaching in both, or being a part of both, I guess, cultures and school systems? Because from an outsider, from what I understand, is that there's to a certain extent, it is here in Australia as well, but there's a lot of pressure on students to do well academically in countries like Singapore. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, that is fair to say. So certainly the Singaporean culture is that education is incredibly important. As a small country which has no natural resources, it will say that its natural resource is its people. And so it has always heavily invested in education, and seeing that as a way for the country to become successful. And it has worked for Singapore, absolutely. And so education in Singapore is a really serious business. It's got some things which would sound strange to us, you know, from Australia. So, for example, when students are 11 years old, they take what's called the PSLE test, which is the primary school leavers exam. And it's a nationwide exam. It's very high pressure. So the whole family rallies around the child. We literally have teachers taking a year off or a term off to prep their kids for this exam. Because what happens in that exam is that it streams you into Singaporean schools. So in the past, it's changed somewhat, which I'll get to in a moment, is that streaming of kids doesn't happen in the classroom. It happens on a school basis. And so students will be funneled into schools which are at their level of attainment, and all the students at that school will be around a similar level of a sort of academic success, if you like. Now, that is very different to what we would be used to in Australia. Those students then you know, they join those schools, and they're then on an academic pathway or a vocational pathway, and that's decided when they're quite young, obviously. So high pressure. Now, Singapore has started to move away from that system, but it's quite deeply ingrained within the culture here. So it's a slow process, but to be fair to the government, it certainly has taken some significant steps to reduce that, where schools now, they stream within the classroom, not so much by what the school is. And so for our Singaporean students, that's been very, very popular. And actually, one of the groups of students that we get at our school is students who have not flourished under that particular system for whatever reason. And so they come to us for something a bit different because, as you might know, class sizes in Singapore are about 40 students in a primary school class, no air conditioning, in a very humid country. And it works. However it works for most students, but for some it doesn't. And so they come to us, and we have a more relational approach, sort of connection before content with our students. And one of the things that I hear most from Singaporean parents who have brought their kids to us is that they've just seen them come out of their shell, grow in confidence, and really become a different person just because of the system that they have been placed in. It's worked for them. And that's not to say the Singaporean system doesn't work for other people. It most certainly does. But for the students that we seem to attract, just that change in the environment makes such a huge difference for them.
Absolutely. Like, hearing you explain that, just so many just questions come to mind. For a start, aircon. Like, is that like in the, like if you're going to a Singaporean, like local school, for example, in the public system or wherever it might be.
Yep.
Every school doesn't have aircon. Is that a thing?
That's correct.
What was that?
That's correct.
You know?
I don't know, but my guess would be the electricity bill. Right. But I don't know for sure.
That's unbelievable.
I think that's just how it's been since it was created.
Because it's not a cold country.
It's certainly not a cold country. It's hot every single day and humid every single day.
That's so interesting. Yeah.
Hmm.
I guess that's what they.
People get used to it. I mean, when that's what you're used to, that's how it is. And so, it's really not something that's talked a lot about here. It's just what the practice is, and they're the sorts of things that you have to get used to. Now, at our school and all the international schools, we all have air conditioning, and I'm very thankful for that. That's for sure.
So, just another thing with that, I guess that when they're 11 years of age and they do that test, which decides I guess what path they'll go down. So if they maybe not so much academic and they go to the vocational path, is there any room to swap over when they how does that work? That's just your path of life.
So what will happen is when you go to that school, they're called, I use the term vocational because I think that's what we're more familiar with in Australia, but it's called technical schools here. So they will go to that, and the vast majority, I'm not saying you can't get out of that system, you can. The vast majority will go on to like a polytechnic here, and where they will learn sort of more vocational skills, but they can get into universities for sure. Yeah. And some will be looking, those who are in a financial position to do so might look to go to overseas universities or community colleges in the US, or they might go to, say, James Cook University, which is an Australian one, which has a small campus here, and then transition into an Australian universities. Because Australian universities are very popular here at my school. The most popular destination is Singapore for universities, but the second most popular is Australia, and then it's the UK, then the US.
Yep. Oh, interesting. No, that's really great insights, mate, especially to the local, I guess, Singaporean system. And I guess just my next question was just going down the wellbeing or the positive education path at your school. But what's the situation with mental health issues with young people as a whole across Singapore, I guess, particularly with the academic pressure?
Yeah, for sure. It's definitely real. It's definitely there. And I think that, like it has done in Australia, the concept of mental health and well-being has become a much greater part of the conversation. Even from when I first moved to Singapore in 2017. Because there's in Australia, I would say, you know, with things like Are You Okay Day and talking about mental health and destigmatizing it and it being part of the natural conversation over sort of the past decades in Australia, that's become just part of the norm. And that's how you do things. That's how you talk about it. Singapore, I would say when I first arrived, and it has moved from that space, it's moved a little bit, is a different approach. And that is that if you talk about it, it encourages it, mental health issues. If you talk about suicide ideation, then it'll be more prevalent because everyone's talking about it and it'll put ideas in people's heads and it will sort of make it contagious. And that's not perhaps what we want. Now, they're sort of two different approaches which have their pros and cons. I would say I have visibly seen in the past 5 years in Singapore a shift to destigmatizing it and to talking about it, to conversations about well-being and resources being put into mental health have certainly increased and become a more normal part of the conversation and have slowly shifted the culture to say that before we can start learning, it's really important that people feel safe and that they have their a good approach to well-being physically, mentally, socially. That if you start there and get to the education part, you'll have a much better experience than if you start at the education and then wonder why somebody's not engaging, somebody's disengaged with school, or they're not relating well to you and saying, well, they should forget about their problems when they come into the classroom. We're here to work. The conversation has certainly shifted in Singapore, even, just during my time here.
That's interesting. Yeah, great insights. Thanks for that. And yeah, it's one of those things that, you know, I think I've just from, you just hear those things about, particularly Asian countries, about how much pressure on the young people to do well academically. But it's great to hear it's becoming a bit more of an awareness, I guess, the mental well-being side of things. And I guess that leads into at your school, Gavin, what's some of the approaches that you take to well-being or positive education across the school with staff and also students?
Sure. Well, I think you have to create an environment where people see it as a learning community and that they can find their own space about what they want to learn. So kind of finding people's strengths and getting them involved in those things. So while academics certainly is a very important part of what we do, it's a constant message of saying it's not the only thing that's important. Being involved in other activities, whether it be service, sports or performing arts, is critical for your own personal development. It helps your academic success and it also helps your transition into uni. The vast majority of our students at this school go into university. It's basically a one-way pathway, other than those students who have to go and do national service, which is a whole nother thing. We'll have students who get very top grades in the IB. Our school's average ATAR of 180 students in year 12 is about 95. Oh, wow. So we are very academic. But we have students who get the top grades, but they don't get into top universities. Right. Part of the reason being is that their portfolio of everything that they've done is not as broad as what other people's are. They might have a lower IB score, but they've got all of these other experiences as well. And so when we're looking to help students, not just get into uni, but with their own personal holistic development, giving them lots of opportunities to do so. So, you know, we have lots of what we call CCAs, which are after school sports and classes. We've got over 45 of those. Oh, wow. And they run every day after school, which is a little bit different from Australia because we have two sessions after school. So it goes from 3:30 to 6, two different sessions there where students are engaged in a whole different, whatever it is they're interested in. And we've got lots of choices for them. And service is a big part of our school as well. And I know it is in many Australian schools, but our service club's probably got about 150 members within it. And that's all by choice. We don't force anybody into it. and they do lots of local work with our local residents, which live around the school. We help them migrant workers, which come over from India and Pakistan and help build in Singapore. We go and support them as well. So we really do try and broaden our students' experience, which I think is really good for them.
Absolutely. And those sessions after school you mentioned, I know that you said the service is optional, but do the students have to be involved in some kind of sport or performing arts? Is that compulsory?
Yes. Yes. So when a student joins us in year seven, because we're just year seven to year 12, they have to do at least one CCA, but most of them do more than that. And they do two or three. And then by the time they get to, say, year 12, we'd like them to do one. But a lot of them, they'll drop it in the last half of their year 12 studies as they head towards their exams.
Absolutely. I just sprung to mind that I'm not sure if I would have fit into your school with an average of 95 points something. I might have brought the average down by a fair bit.
Well, me too.
So I guess that's a long day. So does that impact the teachers as well? Like, what are the hours the teachers put in each day and yourself?
Yep. So our teachers, very similar model to Australian school teachers. We have a full day, but teachers, in addition to that, do their yard duties, they do their home group class, and then they have to do one CCA. And then they also have to do one, what we call event committee, which is like International Day or National Day, Teachers Day, and those sorts of things. But probably the key difference that our school has that is different from Australia is that in Australia, most teachers would have about an 80 to 85% teaching load of the timetabled week. Yep. At our school, teachers have a 60% teaching load.
All right.
So out of a possible 25 lessons, our teachers teach about 15 lessons, and then they have 10 non-instructional time lessons with that, which is incredibly low for the industry.
Absolutely. I guess, is that a deliberate thing, or is that just is that why it works in Singapore?
No, I think it's deliberate by our school to do that. I didn't do that. That was in place before I was the principal here. But it certainly frees up time for teachers to prepare well for lessons and to do all the other things that we expect them to do, particularly with the IB, with extended essays, CAS supervision, TOK projects, those sorts of things. So our teachers are very fortunate. And we're thankful that we're in a position where we can do that.
Absolutely. And with the, I guess, the timetabling, is there a time within that timetable, whether it's maybe year seven, it might be hard for the year, like the year 11 and 12 age group, but is there time in the timetable where it's dedicated to like a wellbeing or positive education lesson specifically, or is it just sort of fitted in around the subjects?
So, we have a pastoral care program, which happens on a Thursday morning. So from 8 till about 8:30, our teachers work through a pastoral care program, which has a number of components to it. But wellbeing is part of that throughout the school, throughout that program. So we've got one of our teachers who heads that up and does a great job. She's from New Zealand. And so we get a lot of New Zealand resources, and I bring a few resources in as well from like Headspace, Beyond Blue, those sorts of things that also supplement the work that we do here quite nicely. But with all that being said, we've got to be careful as well, because we can't just bring in all of the Western style or work that's coming out. And we have to make sure that we're also giving strong consideration to work that's coming out of Asia in this space. And so it's always a balancing act. And like I said at the start, it can be quite easy just to bring all the things that I know, but that can be a real danger, because it doesn't always sit well in this context. And so I have to go out or find other people to go out and find resources that will speak to our student population here. And that is sometimes stuff that I'm not familiar with, but I know that it hits well with them because I see it in their faces.
Yeah, that's interesting, actually. Really, really interesting point. Because you're right. I mean, I guess from what I understand, you'd know more than me, but from what I understand, Australia is, I guess, one of the early adopters of, I guess, the wellbeing / positive education in schools. And you think, well, this is the way to do it, but there's so many other, I guess, ways, and culturally as well, what we might do here might not fit in. And the way that you explain it then is really interesting. And so you've got teachers from different parts of the world. Is there local Singaporean teachers a majority, or is it quite diverse?
Yeah, so back before COVID, we're probably at about 50% Singaporean teachers, 50% expatriate teachers. And expatriate teachers are not just teachers from the UK and Australia. We really do take them from all over the world. But post-COVID, where many Westerners returned to their home countries, didn't stick around in Asia, we replaced those teachers with Singaporeans. And so we're back up to about 65% Singaporean teachers now. And they do a great job. I mean, they're very well educated. They really know their stuff. They're experienced. And our expatriate teachers coming in, often I have to say to them, look, I know that where you have taught before, the focus really to begin with is just engagement, like get the kids engaged, just make sure they're working on something. Whereas here, we're fortunate that we already have many of the students' engagement. I mean, not all of them, of course, but many of the students here, they do see school as being the number one thing in their life. Yeah. And the thing which they are investing in. And so, you know, for us, we've got to say, look, curriculum delivery, what we have got in our unit plans and our schemes of work, it's really, really important that you follow that. Don't bring the stuff over that you've done before in the first instance. Trust us, follow this. And once you know the place a little bit better, then you can start putting your own mark and stamp on it, because you really do have to learn and understand this place before you come in with all your great ideas that just aren't going to sit well with people.
Oh, totally. And you mentioned that before. That's what you did as well when you came in. And I've seen it before, like not from an international perspective, but just teaching at the school that I was at in Australia. And some people would come in and day one, like not even seeing how things work and try to put their stamp on it. It just rubs people up the wrong way. Particularly other teachers.
Yeah.
It's such an important point just to go in, observe, have a look, see how things work, get the feel and the culture of the school, and then I guess work out how you can add value to what's already been done.
Absolutely. And particularly when, you know, we're sitting in Singapore, which, you look at the PISA test results, is arguably the most successful school system in the world, if you just look at it purely on the academic numbers and success. And so, you know, trying to promote perhaps a different way of doing things, you've got to do that with some care, some delicateness and some sensitivity. But like you said, I mean, that's just generally what you should do anyway. It's just perhaps magnified here as being a really important trait.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it comes down to awareness as well, as like you as the teacher to have some awareness about coming into a new environment as well. And mate, really loving our conversation. I've just got one more, I guess, question before we wrap up. So what advice would you have for any aspiring international educators? So, I mean, you mentioned some tips before and some considerations, but how have you found the experience and any recommendations?
Yeah, sure. Look, I've had a wonderful experience. It's been it's gone beyond what I ever expected would happen. I have met some truly incredible people involved in international education. I've met a lady in Jakarta who has started a school literally in a rubbish dump, Indonesia's largest rubbish dump. And to go there and walk in the rubbish with her and seeing people living in the rubbish and then going to school there, run by volunteers, is humbling. And there's no fanfare about it, and you know, just get on with it. And through my work with the IB Heads Council, I've met a lady who was the head of the Pechersk's International School in Kyiv when Russia was invaded, and to hear about the challenges, which are literally life and death, about their staff and their students, again, it's just mind-blowing what others have to face within their communities. I met a guy who lived in Cairo, and he was there for the Arab Spring. And when you're living in an international community and there's an overthrowing of the government and civil unrest, working through that. And then, you know, in Cairo in the last year, they've had a lot of displaced people coming up from the war in Sudan and listening to him about how they support those displaced people coming up to try and find a home for them. It's just incredible to meet these people and hear their stories. It is a tremendous blessing, and I'm just lucky to be with that. So look, if you're thinking about going into international education, you absolutely should have a go at doing it. It's changed my life. It's changed my family's life. We are certainly all the better for it.
Absolutely. It sounds like you're doing some great work over there as well, mate. And what would one thing, if somebody was interested in and wasn't really sure where to start, what's one step someone could take, I guess, to that path to go to the, down the international route?
Sure. I would say hop onto the international school websites where they advertise jobs. Just have a look through. They're well organized. It'll show you the country that's there. It'll show you what the position is, what the school is. And then you really do have to do your homework. Learn about the country, learn about the school. There are some important things to know about international schools, and that is their certifications. So in many countries, anybody can start a school. You might not need a license. If you've got enough money, you can start a school. And so there's various qualities of schools. There's various approaches. There are schools which are there purely for profit, and that makes a big difference to your experience. There are other schools which are, they're not for profit. They reinvest all of their funds back in the school. But a good way of looking at it is look at a school certification. Are they a member or an accredited member of organizations like CIS, Council of International Schools, or WASC, or FABISIA, or COBIS? If you get into schools which have those sorts of accreditations, you're probably going to find something which resonates with what Australia is like. If you move out of that bubble, then you're kind of rolling the dice a little bit with what the school might be like. You might find one which is fine. But yes, certainly do your homework about the country and the school. Because when it goes right, it's great. When it goes wrong, it can be a bit of a mess.
Yeah, absolutely. I could imagine. And terrific insights, mate. Really appreciate it. And really appreciate your time here today. And there's so many takeaways from our conversation today. And I'm sure listeners will take away a lot from it. So really appreciate it, mate.
No worries. Thanks, Ash. It's been great chatting with you. And wish you all the best. And all those teachers in Australia, one day I'm coming home. And I'm looking forward to getting back into a school over in Australia somewhere.
Excellent. Thanks, mate.
Cheers.